This podcast contains language that may not be suitable for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we are going over Single All the Way. Jing, jing, jing. So if you haven't seen it and you don't want us to ruin it for you, you may want to pass on this one, and we will see you next time. Are you ready for one dry kiss? Let Earth receive this podcast. Hopefully you had a great Christmas. Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy, irreverent love letter to rom-com movies, where today we are covering Single All the Way, and it is probably, in your world, the day after Christmas, and in our world, it has not happened yet, but we hope you had a fabulous holiday, and that this is a little Christmas dangler, just to wrap up the festive spirit that is the season. And I am here with my bestie, Corinne, who is my long-term bestie. And if I took her home, no one would believe that we fell in love. Corinne Edding, which is the premise of this movie. I'm not just pulling that out of my ass out of nowhere.
It is true. But there's about as much sexual tension between us and a piece of celery and a carrot. So there you go.
Yes, which go well together, but you wouldn't want to see them fucking.
Correct. And I am here with the most wonderful, most benevolent, the loveliest and most forgiving human being on the face of the earth, Miss Tamara Cosio.
Why? And why? Why? Why are we bringing that up, gentle listeners? Because it finally happened after over 2 years. We have a do-over episode. Corinne.
Yeah, the memory card that I used to record on wasn't working with my computer. It was a good time, and my heart dropped it, because you know what I need to be doing right now? Editing the podcast before this episode. But instead, Tamara is graciously lending us her beautiful voice and her beautiful time to re-record this episode of Single All the Way. And Single All the Way was a total gift to me, because watching it was just such a joy. So, Tamara, you really, really, really like me, don't you?
I'm very happy to be here right now.
It's also a Saturday morning, so you know.
Yeah. Saturday morning, I'm on my third cup of coffee to get some pep, because to recapture the magic that we did with the initial recording, because that was a banger episode. Corinne disagrees, but I'm like, this is the one that was going to catapult us into the stratosphere, Corinne. And it's gone. It's gone. It probably wasn't that good, but we were
no, it was amazing. Having a I would say that it was probably the best episode that we've ever recorded. And I'm not exactly sure now. It's lost to the sands of time. I guess no one will ever be able to hear it.
The best episode that no one will hear.
Yes.
So, Corinne, how, aside from technical difficulties, how are you doing?
You know, I will say that I don't have a lot in me this Christmas season. And
yeah.
So with the whole Thanksgiving dad pacemaker, and then like the next week or the following week, I can't remember, I had a medical procedure, and you know, fun. I'm all good. I'm healthy. Everything's fine. And my dad's all good. He's healthy. Everything's fine. And also, I'm just fucking tired. I'm done. I'm ready to go on break. I am ready to not be working. I am ready for all of the just stick a fork in me done stuff. So typically I get a Christmas tree. And this year, all I want for Christmas is for my apartment to just be like beautiful and clean and lovely. And so that is hopefully what I will be working on over the Christmas break. Although tonight I may end up going to Tilden Park, where they have a nighttime train ride with twinkle lights and whatnot, and that might be kind of sweet and magical, but I don't know.
That's cool.
Yeah. What about you, Miss Tamara? How you doing?
Well, I know nothing about being burnt out, first of all. We haven't gotten a tree here either. And I hope by now, Corinne, by the time this episode airs, that you are kicking your feet up and relaxing and enjoying yourself. Because this is our last episode before we go on our month-long break in January. Let me knock on wood, because I said that the last time and it didn't wind up being our last episode because we're re-recording. So I'm going to say we are going on our vacation, apropos of nothing.
Yes.
But yeah, the most festive holiday thing I've done was I went to my Christmas party last week, which was a mixed bag, because
I dub it the Christmas Hunger Games. I think I've talked about it in previous years. Yes. Where my boss, my very special boss, he likes to put all of his employees into various teams and then have them compete against each other. And whoever does the best in all his little invented competitions gets more bonus money. So is it fun? Not after 7 years. And does it cause animosity between coworkers? A little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't imagine.
And then the cherry on top is probably my lovely boss. He's an MC for the majority of the Christmas party. And so there's some key elements where he's like got the microphone and he's riffing and he's, you know, trying to be entertaining. And this year he was in banner form because I don't think he's ever skipped a year where he said something offensive or done something that made me cringe. This year was no different.
Ooh.
This poor kid that had like very cool hair was doing the Christmas sweater competition, and he had like a light up reindeer ears, and he was sporting like a really cool afro, and Charlie kept touching it.
No.
And asking him if it was real.
Oh, fuck,
is this real? Kid's like, ah, oh, Jesus. And then he just kept touching it. I'm like, stop touching his hair, which wasn't the worst part. The worst part was when he got further down the line in the Christmas sweater competition and he outed some assistant manager who didn't show up last year and let everybody, well over 100 people in the company, know that it's because his tags were expired when he was on his way to the event, got pulled over, got arrested, and then proceeded to make jokes about him making friends with the biggest man in jail so that he could get out in one piece, basically insinuating that he got anal fucked. So it was just...
So your boss man's keeping it classy, I see.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Every year keeping it classy.
Uh-huh. Classy with a K. Yeah.
So there was that. That's kind of like a reflection of my holiday season. You want it to be good. You want it to be fun. And then shit just keeps coming down the pipeline where you're like, And it's not just due to the Christmas party. There's also some like little things going on in my life that maybe I'll feel okay with talking about next time, but not now.
Oh, anyways, gentle listeners, we've been struggle bussing it through November and December, and we're ready.
It's like the hits keep coming. Yeah. The hits keep coming. It's not your normal holiday season for us over here in ODK world, so we're getting by, and hopefully at the tail end of this, we'll be like, we did the best that we could with what we had.
Yes.
Which, if that is you, gentle listeners out there, you're in good company and you can just do the best you can with what you have.
Yes.
Hopefully your holiday season is magical and wonderful, or it was. And even if it's not, fuck yeah that you got through it and that you're here with us now.
Yay. Congratulations on making it through. And yes, if you found it to be delightful, yay. So happy for you too. But gentle listeners,
I'm mad at you. I'm mad at you.
Gentle listeners who are having a hard time, we have your back. That's all we're saying.
I'm giving you the stink eye. I'm saying I'm fine with it, but I'm talking like this. I'm fine with it. Yeah. You've had a great Christmas? That's awesome. I'm so happy for you. Just kidding. So, Corinne, speaking of Christmas magic, do you have a synopsis for us?
Oh, why, yes, I do. It's a little more dramatic than usual, but yeah, I do have a synopsis for us.
What? Dramatic?
Yes.
Including sound effects and a presentation to go along with it.
I'm sorry, gentle listeners, that you can't see the PowerPoint presentation that I am including. However, just know that your minds would be blown if you could.
Ugh, yes. And if Corinne had her way, we'd be doing PowerPoint. No. We would be doing spreadsheets.
Spreadsheets
every episode.
Yes.
Spreadsheets. It's a gift that keeps on giving.
It is. You can sort
it's
information.
Not.
So, okay. Don't even get me started. Anyway, synopsis. Peter, played by Michael Urie of Ugly Betty fame, he's awesome, and Nick, played by Philemon Chambers, have been besties for 9 years, ever since they bumped into each other during their first week in Los Angeles. Since then, they have been connected at the hip and roommates, but they're just friends! Really, back off! They're just friends! Just because they're gay doesn't mean there's any romance between them. Jeez, people! Take a breath. Anywho, when Peter becomes unexpectedly single right before Christmas, he has the great idea that Nick should come back home to New Hampshire with him and pretend to be his boyfriend and stay with Peter's family over Christmas. Nick begrudgingly agrees, and Peter is thrilled. Will Peter's family have a makeshift wedding set up for them when they arrive? Will Peter and Nick's friendship survive Peter's wacky family? And does wine make everything better? Keep those listening ears listening to find out.
The answer is no, no, and yes. Actually, no, I think it's no, yes, yes. Anyways, we'll get into it. I guess we'll find out together.
It'll all unfold. But the last one is definitely yes. Wine does make everything better.
Yes. No, that's what I was focusing on. I'm like, wine, yes. Yes, wine. What time is it? 12 in the afternoon. Too early.
It's wine time. It's wine time. That's what time it is. So, Miss Tamara, are you ready to jingle all the way, jing, 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 with us and get us started on the movie?
I sure am.
Ooh.
Are you ready for single all the way? We open on a gaggle of shirtless men with shaving cream beards modeling on a faux snow set for a razor blade shoot.
Ooh, hello.
Peter, played by Michael Urie, is directing the models when he's approached by their agent, Adam, who implores them to cut the shoot short so they all can go to Josh and Philip's party.
Jeez.
Peter would love to, but his boss is a tyrannical, indecisive micromanager, so Peter has to get every angle imaginable before quitting. Adam asks, is Peter going to the party too? And he smiles slyly and admits, yes, and I'm bringing my boyfriend. Adam's head whips around and he asks, how long? Peter responds contently, 8.5 inches. Oh, you mean time. 3 months and 22 days. Peter didn't actually say that. That was a funny joke Tamara injected into there. Ah, sorry. Adam snarks and picks up his phone, claiming, I gotta type this into the Peter Guinness Book of World Records. Peter scowls and murmurs, I hate you. Cut to Peter at his apartment, which is a bona fide plant sanctuary. He lovingly squirts his Chinese money plant named Linda while telling her she looks a little limp before being poked by his cactus Judith.
Squirts with what?
Squirts with water. It's a little watch.
Oh. Okay.
What were you picturing, Corinne? Do tell.
I don't know. You're talking about the limp plant and squirting. And so I was just curious. That's all.
That's Corinne, where Corinne's head goes, gentle listeners. You know that she is the more sexual, promiscuous one of the two of us. And Lord knows what she imagines Peter squirting all over his plants. But I assure you, what he was actually doing in the movie was very G-rated. Water in a squirty thingy.
Just because I haven't managed to be continually in a relationship for the past, like, 50 years doesn't... Don't scorn me for that.
I'm not scorning you. I'm just explaining. If anybody listens to this for the first time, that is her way.
Uh-huh.
That is Corinne's way.
Okay.
Peter's roommate Nick and Nick's dog Emmett bound into the apartment. Peter says, get ready, as Nick slumps into a chair. And he grumbles, I'm too tired. I don't want to go. Besides, you're going with your man. Peter reminds him, I told you you shouldn't have accepted so many task rabbits. Besides, he can't come until 9, but that doesn't matter because you're going. Nick sits unmoved and pushes back. I don't have anything plaid to wear. And Peter nonchalantly points to the bookshelf behind him where a smart suit and a plaid tie hang. Aww. I knew you'd do this, so I already found something for you to wear. I'm calling the Uber. Nick throws his hands up exasperated and cries, it's official. You know me too well.
Cut to Josh and Philip's posh party, which is in full swing. I hear those sleigh bells jingling, ring, ting, tingling, ting, 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 ting. Come on, it's lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you. There's Christmas music playing. It's all very festive. Peter approaches the hosts and tells them that they've outdone themselves. Josh brags, I did everything myself. And Philip corrects him. By everything, he means micromanaging 3 event planners and repeatedly threatening to sue them on Judge Judy.
Oh, same. Every time I have a slight that's even remotely legal related, I'm like, can I call Judge Judy on this? Because they do pay for your legal fees. I don't know if you knew this. Judge Judy and all those judge court shows, yeah.
Is that why I got a letter from Judge Judy? It kind of got away from me. I lost under a pile of things. And now I'm wondering, what did you take me to court for?
To the defendant, Corinne Edding. Here to withholding for accidentally deleting her part of the last episode of the podcast. Well,
yes.
I don't know that many legal words, so I'll just leave it at that. You know what you've done. I love this whole innocent thing you're playing for everybody in the audience. Like, what would you ever be taking me to court for? Oh, about 3.5 hours of my life that I'm not getting back. That's all.
And here I thought I was worth it, but you know, whatever, it's fine. Judge Judy will understand. Judge Judy knows my pain. Judge Judy and I. We have tea together regularly, so.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
I didn't know she was native to Oakland.
I light her cigarettes for her, you know. Did you know
Judge Judy does not smoke?
Did you know that she can be bought for a carton of cigarettes at Virginia Slim's, you know.
Good to know. I'm going to approach her with two about this lawsuit that's pending.
Nick approaches the trio with a drink for himself and Peter. Peter chuckles because he grabbed Nick a drink too. So they both sit there, double fisting the drinks. Gentle listeners, get your minds out of the gutter. Until their friends depart to mingle, but not before stating that they're both green with envy over Peter and Nick's sweet friendship.
That's interesting, because I thought that the two hosts were together, but it winds up that they're just friends, a lot like Peter and Nick.
Oh, they aren't together?
No, or else they would be not. They wouldn't be envying their friendship.
Well, they can still envy their friendship. I definitely think that they are together.
I think that they're not together. But you know what, gentle listeners, if you want to weigh in, you don't have anything to do after your Christmas holiday and your families are all in a food coma laying around you, please write into onedrykiss@gmail.com and let us know. Were they friends or were they lovers?
I will put up a poll for our Spotify listeners. Once alone, Peter and Nick cheers their glasses. This is the eighth time they've attended Josh and Philip's soiree together. They reflect on all the social climbing they, mostly Peter, did to get invited to said party when Agent Adam and his gaggle of hot, hot, gay models, who sadly are arriving with clothes on, they are not shirtless, but you know.
The night is young.
The night is young. Adam beelines it straight towards Peter and says, "Hey, ho, ho, hoes. So where's the guy?" Peter explains that his beau is in the hospital and won't get out until 9. Adam cringes. Why is he in the hospital? Butt stuff. Peter explains that he's a cardiologist. I had a friend who was an anesthesiologist assistant working in a San Francisco hospital. And she was like, the amount of things that I witnessed being taken out of people's butts.
Wow. Yeah. That's amazing.
Gotta keep it flared. Keep it flared, man. Yeah. Anywho.
I think I would, over the years, like, have a butt stuff bingo card just to make the holidays interesting. Ooh, and so, yeah. Therefore, like, if you had duplicate butt stuff injuries come into your hospital or operating room, you could just, like, cross it off. It would keep things spicy. Keep things interesting.
Worst idea ever? Lego butt plug. Yeah, no. I mean, it just breaks apart all over. It's just bad. Bad, bad, bad.
Is that one thing that she saw?
No, I made that up.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I'm like, who thought that was a good idea? Somebody with a Lego fetish, perhaps? Ooh. It wasn't a Lego butt plug when it started. It was an airplane, but still.
Peter explains that the real reason that his boyfriend is at the hospital is that he's a cardiologist. And his friend eyes him approvingly. Just then, the man, the myth, the legend, Tim, the boyfriend, walks in. And Peter and his heart eyes point him out. A rugged, good-looking man played by Hallmark hunk and star Steve Lund, who also played a tasty snack of a man, Jake, in Schitt's Creek. A man whose sexuality encompassed the full rainbow. Just ask David and, what's her name? His bestie?
I want to say Topanga, but that's not what Andy? Was it Andy?
No. It is Stevie. You were close.
Damn it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Closer than me, because mine was just an empty thought bubble. So,
well, I didn't start off strong with Topanga, so there's that.
Yeah, so just ask David and Stevie. However, he approaches with his 1,000-watt smile, and Adam breathes, "What do I have to do to be cardiac arrested?" Peter leaves his crowd and takes his man out onto the patio for some privacy, where they shamelessly flirt with each other. Peter is excited about going home for the holidays, but wishes Tim was going with him. This is the first time he's not single when he sees his family. And Peter pleads, "Come with me to New Hampshire. My family will love you. And you have a bunch of time off." Tim looks deeply into his eyes and agrees, saying, "Let's deck those halls together." Peter is thrilled, but the celebration is short-lived because the hospital calls and Tim is needed back at work. Peter's good mood isn't deterred by his man leaving the party. No, because one, he's got Nick there. And two, he good-naturedly says, "No, go. It's a sign. Make that doctor money so you can pay for your plane ticket."
Oh, yeah, for sure. The main reason why he wanted Tim to come so all of his friends could see his hottie boyfriend. He's like, "Okay, mission accomplished. You're done. You're only staying for 10 minutes. That's fine. Just make a couple of rounds around the room together before you leave." Absolutely. And announce loudly to everyone, "He's a doctor. He's got to go back to the hospital. Cardiologist here getting called away. Say goodbye.
Very important life-saving work to do."
"He has my heart and everybody else's because he's a cardiologist." Next, we see Peter chatting on the phone with his dad while out Christmas shopping. He asked his dad, played by Barry Botswick, what he should get Mom. And Dad says without missing a beat, "Wine glasses. She broke two last night." Peter's taken aback. "How did she break two?" And Dad responds flatly, "Wine." Then we get a myriad of Peter's other calls asking what everyone in the family wants. Mom, played by Kathy Najimy, tells him, "Dad's in a little bit of a hoarder. Get him one of those things, like those big metal things that you put a bunch of trash in that you keep outside." Peter asks, "A dumpster?" And Mom agrees, Yes, a dumpster. Get your dad a dumpster. The gift that keeps on giving or taking. His little sister started a farm-to-table makeup line called Farm on My Face. Ooh. And tries to convince him to buy products for the other family members. And lastly, his older sister just wants him home because she misses his stupid face.
Aww.
Or a Rolex. Real or fake. Either one. Meanwhile, across town, roommate Nick is on top of a roof putting up Christmas decorations, while a chatty housewife gushes below, "I'm so excited that you TaskRabbits do decorations, because the normal guy that usually puts them up wasn't answering his calls, but it winds up he was not answering his calls because he died putting up Christmas decorations."
Oh, no.
Just then, her husband pulls up and it's Peter's man, Tim? He doesn't recognize Nick and goes inside with his wife, but Nick recognizes him because we cut to Peter that night, calling Tim a liar and a cheater on the phone and telling him off while Nick looks on sympathetically. But it's still the holidays, so the next day Peter is anger packing when Nick wanders into his room and asks how long exactly he's going to be at his family's house in New Hampshire. Peter sourly says, "Maybe I'll stay forever," before flopping down on his bed. Nick says sagely, "Because Bridgewater, New Hampshire, population 36 has a huge buffet of single gay men." Peter argues, "Well, the all-you-can-eat buffet in Los Angeles has served me nothing but 7 heartbreaks." Nick counters, "Well, maybe it's not L.A. Maybe it's because you picked the wrong guys." Peter resigns to being single forever, although that's kind of like that's a little bit of a deep cut, especially now when he met this great guy and just wound up that he's straight. Unbeknownst to Peter, and so like through no fault of his own.
Well, he's bi, so, probably, Nick, at least, at minimum bi.
I know, but it's not like he was looking at him going, "So you have a wife and kids at home?"
Yeah.
"That's fine, I'm okay with that. As long as they stay in their lane, we're good." So that's kind of like I don't know what else Peter was dating before, but Nick, give like a little bit of grieving time. Just give him a little bit of grieving time. Nick resigns to being single forever and staying in New Hampshire, accepting his role as a gunkle and a plant lady forever. Then he adds jokingly, "I think you should come home with me. We'll tell my family we finally fell in love." Nick walks out, not taking it seriously, but the hamster wheel in Peter's head really gets going and he realizes, that's not such a bad idea.
Ooh, really, though? Is it? Is it a good idea? Chases Nick around the house, trying to convince him he can get over his heartbreak while showing his family that he's not incapable of having long-term relationships. And besides, they already ask why we're not together. Nick responds exasperated. Oh, straight people say that about gay friends. Besides, I stocked up for my solo holiday staycation. As he pulls out a variety of delicious things that Tamara would also love. like jars of olives, delicious nuts.
You don't know me.
And maybe some of Trader Joe's Havarti dill cheese like I have in my refrigerator right now.
Fuck right off, Corinne. Why must you rub in that I live 9 miles away from Trader Joe's in every direction? The last two places I've lived at have been exactly 9 miles away from Trader Joe's. I don't understand it. It's like I repel the store, even though I love it so. And it just happens to be within walking distance around the corner from you.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Stop throwing your Havarti in my face.
And it's even closer for, you know, after my workout, then I can just walk literally across the street to the Trader Joe's to pick up my lunch for the day for work. It's really great.
Even if you didn't, your walk from your house to that Trader Joe's is fucking gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's magical. There is a house with a goddamn moat and a bridge to it. It's like...
Look, I can't help that my unicorn knows the way to the closest Trader Joe's, okay?
Yes, I know that too, but you don't have to keep shoving your Havarti at me, okay? That's all I'm saying. Don't shove your Havarti at me. I am grieving the loss of a close Trader Joe's, and you just keep dangling it in front of me.
Well, you know, if you lived over here, you would not have that issue.
If I lived over there, I would be destitute because it's fucking ridiculously expensive to live where you are.
I don't know what you're talking about. Anywho, back to Single All the Way. Peter takes a different tact and says, I don't want you here alone, reminiscing about all those great Christmases you and your mom had when you were a kid. You shouldn't be left by yourself with those feelings at Christmas. This finally cracks Nick's resolve, but he's not fully sold and wonders aloud how ridiculously expensive last-minute holiday plane tickets cost. And this is where Peter should say, I'm asking you to go with me, and on short notice, I will pay for your motherfucking ticket since you are doing me a favor. Thank you very much. But he doesn't. No. No, instead, Peter gives him suggestions as to how he can pay for the fucking ticket. Excuse me? Baking powder? No. No, 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 no. Peter, that is not how you handle that kind of a situation. Peter reminds him that he has Saving Emmett money. This prompts Emmett the dog to grab a copy of the children's book Saving Emmett off of a shelf and bring it to Nick. Peter gleefully grabs it, thanks the dog, and tells his roomie, and you'll make more money when you write the sequel to Saving Emmett. Nick seems unconvinced that he can write a successful second book, but Peter assures him, you're smart enough, you're good enough, and gosh darn it, people like you. And his friend...
And your dog.
And your dog. And his friend finally agrees to go home with his bestie and adds, but we are not doing that boyfriend thing. And Peter assures him they are 100% doing the boyfriend thing, which is just another reason why he should be paying for the ticket. Chivalry? Amen. Mm. Give me some chivalry. Give me some chivalry for Nick when you go to fucking New Hampshire. Peter says that them being together is the greatest, pretending that they're together is the greatest present he can possibly give his parents. So here comes the airplane into the hangar. They fly to New Hampshire. And
even though we don't see it.
Even though we don't see it.
And Corinne would be complaining the whole way about how he should have paid for his friend's ticket.
Yes.
So that's good.
Well, just you know, as I said the last time we recorded, if Tamara wanted me to go across the country to her family in New Hampshire, which she doesn't have, and have me pretend that I was her girlfriend, if she didn't buy me a ticket, then I would buy myself a first class ticket and I would make sure I was on the same flight as her. And then I would continue to go back to where she was sitting and ask her about how comfortable she is and talk about how wonderful it was up where I was sitting. So,
as is her way. Yeah. Corinne is nothing if not petty.
It's the bratty little sister in me. I can't help it.
Look at Tam. They have complimentary champagne up there. I got 3 glasses, even though I don't drink, just so I could waggle them in front of your face.
Wish you could have it, but oh, I can't give it to you. Sorry. Mm. We cut to the duo in a car driving through the snowy streets of New Hampshire. Nick peppers Peter with questions. How much does your mom know? Does she know I'm coming? Did she ask why I was randomly taking along at the last minute? Peter assures him that he's practically family and everyone will be thrilled that he's there. When they pull up to Peter's familial home, Mom is standing outside waving a sign that reads, Slay Queen, Slay spelled S-L-E-I-G-H. And I halfway think that one of the reasons why Tamara picked this movie is because of all the wordplay that's in it.
Absolutely.
The guys chuckle and Nick asks, did Carol look up funny gay Christmas signs? Peter says, yes. And then she took it to her crafting room and made a sign. By the way, she demands everyone call her Christmas Carol for the whole month of December. Nick seems tickled and asks, how did I not know your mom had a holiday-specific drag name? The guys bound out of the car and warm greetings and hugs are given all around. Christmas Carol dubs Nick as Saint Nick when she sees him and then hands each of the boys matching reindeer antler earmuffs as if she's Oprah. You get a pair and you get a pair and you get a pair.
They all go inside and are sitting around the kitchen eating treats when Mama Carol says slyly, Lisa, your sister said you were bringing home a surprise and I thought you were bringing home a boyfriend, but I'm glad you didn't because then you would have ruined my surprise. Peter looks titillated. Surprise? And Nick adds, I think Carol has something up her sleeve. Mama looks at Saint Nick pointedly until he corrects himself. I mean, Christmas Carol. Christmas Carol. She nods appeased and then fills the boys in that she has a blind date set up for Peter with a guy named James who's really cute. Peter protests, I don't want to go on a blind date. But he's cut off by Dad who comes in, giving his son and Nick big hugs all around. Carol doesn't let the interruption stop her from continuing to try and convince Peter to see James. But there's questions. Peter has questions. What is a single gay man doing in this town? Carol points out, well, you two are here. Yes, Peter agrees, but what is he doing here? Christmas Carol responds, what a great question to ask on your first date. Nick is 100% on board for the setup because that means he's off the hook for the whole pretending that they're boyfriends ruse. He gets on board the blind date choo-choo train and tries to get Peter to agree. When his roomie gives him the stink eye, Nick switches gears and sweetly tells the parents that he's so glad they let him crash their Christmas. They pish-posh because he's like family. And Dad clunkily excuses himself because there's a pesky leak in the basement and I can't fix it and I have to call our plumber. Shucks. Nick's face lights up and he says, why don't you let me fix it? And Dad smiles because that was his plan all along, but Mama Carol said it would be rude to ask a guest. Dad argues, but I hate that plumber because he overcharges and he smells like roast beef, so screw him because we have our own handy bunny. Everyone snickers and Peter corrects him, Taskrabbit Dad, he's a Taskrabbit. Dad and Nick head downstairs to take care of the task at hand, and Peter's a little miffed that Dad didn't ask him to fix the pipes. Mama Carol reminds him that he has his own gifts like fixing her sad poinsettias and asks her son if he could work his plant magic. And he agrees as long as she drops the date talk. I don't think that's possible. I don't think Mama Carol's capable.
Downstairs, Pop and Nick are knee deep in pipes.
Is that a euphemism?
Well, exactly. Part of the terror of dating is when I see somebody's occupation as a pipe fitter and I'm like, are they a pipe fitter or are they a pipe fitter? Also, do they like to eat tacos or do they like to eat tacos? I don't know.
But I'm willing to find out, right, Corinne? Right?
Dad asks, you know, you don't meet a gay handyman every day. How did you learn to do this? Nick responds candidly, YouTube and HGTV. Dad asks, is that homosexual gay network? And Nick chuckles and says, basically. Dad murmurs, oh, I'll have to check it out. And then adds suspiciously, it's not porn, is it? And Nick turns towards him and says seriously, kinda.
It is definitely porn.
Oh, it's house porn. I love it.
Just lay that tile right there and that backsplash. That backsplash. Oh.
Oh, Property Brothers, take me. Take me now. Back upstairs, Mom has revealed an ulterior motive for the James date. If they hit it off, maybe Peter will move back home. Peter argues, you can't just put two gay people together and make it work. Mom agrees, I've been reading Loving Your LGBTTT Child. Peter wonders if she could possibly mean LGBTQ. And she says, sure. But regardless, now I feel better prepared to play gay matchmaker. She tells her son he's a trainer and all the girls went wild for him until they found out he's gay. So I told him all about you and showed him your picture and he thought you were really cute. Peter rolls his eyes and mumbles, show me his picture. Mom grabs her phone and then realizes, oh, I don't have any pictures of him. Peter argues, but you showed him a picture of me. Mama agrees, but adds, I have 100 pictures of you in my phone. Why would I have any pictures of him? That would be weird. Maybe he's on the Facebook. She gives a cursory look, but is quickly distracted by like baby geese and kittens.
Aren't we all? I have that problem also. Look at this. Oh, wait. Let me just watch these 36 videos before I show you what I actually meant to show you.
A little later, Peter is unpacking in his childhood bedroom when Nick joins him. Peter gives him an earful about ending their relationship without consulting him. Nick points out that their relationship hadn't started yet, and Peter argues, it absolutely did when you endorsed me going on this blind date, as if we're looking for a third. Nick assures his friend, it's just a date, but that's the whole point. Peter argues, one date isn't a relationship and it will probably not work out and somehow it'll be all my fault. He flops on the bed dramatically and laments about how he really wanted to bring Tim home. Nick realizes, nothing like you going there to be there for your friend, and he laments about how he wanted to bring somebody else.
And didn't even pay for your plane ticket.
Nick realizes his friend is still grieving and offers, well, it's a good thing you didn't, because then you'd have to call your mom in a month or so to explain that he is married to a woman and has children. And bonus, now I don't have to lie to your family for 10 days, which is the real saving grace here. I love that this initially was a... we're supposed to pretend to be together movie, and then they end up having it not be a we're supposed to pretend to be together movie. I like that it worked out that way.
Yes. Full circle. Big circle.
Peter jokingly sighs, you are the worst fake boyfriend. And I'm sure Nick is like, tips his hat and is like, thank you very much.
Yes. You damn Skippy. If being worst boyfriend means that I don't have to lie to your family for 10 days, then yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Put that in the dictionary next to my face. Worst boyfriend, Nick. Just then, Sister Lisa arrives and hollers, get your stupid face. What?
Sister Lisa, played by Jennifer Robinson, who played Jocelyn on Schitt's Creek. Yay!
Oh, that's right. I leave out the best people sometimes, and it's just usually because I've got my nose to the grindstone when I'm making the outline, so I apologize.
Oh, I got
She's
you
She's amazing.
She is amazing.
Thank you so much. Lisa arrives and hollers, get your stupid face down here. I miss you. She has two teen daughters named Sophia and Daniela and her husband, whose name doesn't matter, in tow. The roommates race down the stairs and Peter and his sister hug and do their special secret handshake. Why don't we have a special secret handshake, Corinne?
I wonder why we don't have a special secret dance. Like, you know, so.
I know, like a routine.
Yes.
That I think we all liked different music too much when we were growing up.
I don't know. I can just see us doing.
We can't do a routine to Eternal Flame.
Yeah. Eternal Flame. We get some scarves going. It'll be amazing.
Oh, my God. Who are you? The Bangles or Stevie Nicks with all those scarves?
Yeah. And there's just going to be really soft, gauzy lighting, you know, and.
Oh, yeah.
Slow mo
effects.
The
Vaseline.
Yeah.
User tip, gentle listeners, I know every single phone has a blur feature, but if your blur feature is not blurry enough, you just get a little swab of Vaseline and put it over the lens, and then you'll have like ethereal glows and blurry figures abound.
For days.
For days, probably, yeah. That's how long it'll take you to wipe it off.
Yeah.
But still, in the meantime, you'll look good. Lisa gushes, earlier today, a memory came up of when you took me out in West Hollywood and made me get on the bar with all those shirtless cowboys. Nick questions, made you? While her daughters chastise her for putting that picture in their head. Ah!
And her husband checks. He asks, I can't remember if it's Nick or Peter. They were gay, right?
Oh, yeah. Of course. West Hollywood.
Yeah.
West Hollywood.
Yes. Very gay.
That whole, like, part of LA is the gay district. It's a whole city within a city, gay district. Lisa complains that she never gets out, and her husband reminds her that they do own a bar. So then Peter's little sister, Ashley, arrives with her two sons, Sam and Simon, in tow. And as Peter hugs them all, he introduces Nick to his nephews and informs the boys, he wrote your favorite book, Saving Emmett. The boys are super impressed and asked if the dog came too. Nick tells them, sadly, no. The doggy hates flying and is at the doggy hotel with all his doggy friends. And the boys continue to pepper him with questions before the whole family convene to the kitchen. Everyone's hanging out and Lisa's holding court, complaining about the last time Aunt Sandy directed and wrote the local nativity Christmas pageant and how Banana Sai came out. Then, as if on cue, Aunt Sandy, played by Jennifer Coolidge, arrives in all her glory, carrying shiny packages and loudly singing, Joy to the world, the Lord is come. She informs the fam that she heard Whitney Houston's version of Joy to the World and she needs to put it in the show stat. She hugs her nephew Peter and then notices Nick nearby and immediately lets go of Peter, saying, well, well, you have quite a handsome new boyfriend. Nick shakes his head and Peter explains that they're just friends, but Mama Carol butts in, saying in a sing-songy voice, but he may have a boyfriend tomorrow. Ooh. Everyone wants the deets and Nick fills them in. Aunt Sandy cries, you have a blind date like on Tinder? And Peter says, no, like from Mom. Everyone explodes into cheers about the potential love connection, except Peter's teen nieces, Sophia and Daniela, who observe that they were both super sure that Peter and Nick would eventually wind up together.
Mama Carol switches gears and asks the brood, who wants to see my new Christmas tree? Everyone files into the living room as Christmas Carol ceremoniously plugs in an all-white fake Christmas tree decorated with gold ribbons and ornaments. Everyone gasps, but not in appreciation. They hate it. Carol argues, it's elegant and will be so much easier to clean up. There won't be a ton of needles everywhere. Besides, I love the ornaments that came with it. She lifts one up and Aunt Sandy nearby agrees, I love them too. Carol squints at her sister incredulously and holds out her hand because Sandy has procured a pair of the star ornaments and put them on as earrings. Christmas Carol bullies Nick, asking him, you like the tree, right, Nick? And Nick says, yeah. Huh? Real firm-like. He's there for it. And Peter and other family members look at him with eyes of betrayal.
Mm-mm. Because it looks like a big white pipe cleaner. It's not cute.
No, it's not cute.
Sparkly pipe cleaner, I'll give it that. But that's, it's white. It's like not Christmas flocky white. It's like this bitch has gone up into flames and it is just an ash of its former self white.
It needs, if you're going to have a tree like that, it needs to be teal or bright pink. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, I disagree. I don't know about a bright pink tree.
No, because they're the modern, you know, it's the modern tree.
So we're doing a gender reveal with our trees this year, people. Is it going to be teal or is it going to be pink?
No gender reveals. Sandy begrudgingly hands back the Christmas tree ornament baubles, and Peter's family is eclectic, and Aunt Sandy is the quintessential nut.
But to be fair, Jennifer Coolidge is like the best nutty actress. Like, oh, she can make nutty so goddamn charming.
Yes, she's fantastic at it. Favorite is Legally Blonde. You know, I think that's what really shot her to, I would say, broader fame. She was just so perfect in that role. But she's fantastic in this.
Yes, and Kathy Najimy also plays a very good, quirky character as well. So the two of them together in a scene, chef's kiss.
Yes. Mwah. The next morning, Peter is in bed and is awoken by persistent knocking on his second floor bedroom window. Nothing to see here. Not creepy at all. It's totally fine. He opens the window to find his bestie on a ladder. Nick explains that he got up early to finish putting up the family's Christmas lights. Peter tells him, you don't have to do that. But Nick argues, I'm good at it and I enjoy it. But the main reason he's knocking is Mama Carol tasked him with waking Peter up to make sure he's not late for his date. Peter irritatedly informs his friend that the date is not until 1 p.m., right after Mom finishes her spin class with his date. Yeah, Nick agrees, and it's noon. You have jet lag. Peter calls his friend a pusher as he closes the window, but not before Nick urges, "Don your gay apparel."
Oh, your gayest of apparel.
He shows up to the date dressed like little Lord Fauntleroy. It's amazing. Peter does don his gay apparel and goes to the gym.
Which is very normal. It's very normal.
But he is not wearing a blue velvet suit with like a ruffle shirt underneath it. Yeah. But if he was, I'd be very impressed.
Way to make a good first impression,
yeah.
Peter.
Yeah. While he waits, he texts his boss, who has the audacity to ask him work questions on his vacation. 1 o'clock rolls around. You wouldn't know anything about that.
Involuntary. Yeah. Involuntary reaction. Yeah. I feel that so hard, Peter, because I don't know why inexplicably for like the last couple of years when I have a day off and I ask for the day off and the day off gets approved, for some reason, my boss needs to call me for something like really random and super not important or time pressing. And I'm just like, it's almost like a Pavlovian response to me being gone to see if he's like, I'm going to call her and see if she answers. And I did for a while. And then I stopped because I'm like, you know, the one way to nip this in the bud is just to not answer the phone. And sure enough, it stopped.
Yay!
But I was Peter for a long time picking up that phone and answering and responding and doing my job, even though I was off.
1 o'clock rolls around, Mom's class ends, and she rounds the corner followed by James, who's played by the very dreamy Hallmark star, Luke McFarlane. Swoon! Peter must not have gotten to see the picture because his tongue practically rolls across the floor when the buff, sweaty instructor comes over. They shake hands and James suggests they go for a coffee. We don't have Starbucks here, but there's a coffee shop run by Mrs. Claus and she makes a mean peppermint latte. Peter responds, oh good, it's about time Mrs. Claus branched out on her own. James chuckles and Mama Carol rambles excitedly, isn't he funny? He's funny too. Very, very smart and handsome.
Next we see the guys, sans mom, sipping lattes, but they're still talking about Carol. James says, Peter, your mom's the best. She's always talking about you. He doesn't find that surprising and jokes, you probably thought you were going out with the smartest, coolest, funniest person that was ever born. James looks at him with little hearts in his eyes and says, how do you know I'm not? Ooh. Causing Peter to do a spit take, expelling a mouthful of coffee across the table. Peter sheepishly says, well, now you know I'm not the coolest, so we got that out of the way. Then while cleaning up, accidentally blurts out, why are you in this town? He realizes how accusatory that sounds and apologizes, but James gets it. The gay dating community in this small New Hampshire hamlet is non-existent, especially when it snows. Then Peter points out, and it always snows. James nods in agreement, but continues to explain that he got here because of a job at the ski resort. He loves to ski, and when it got too hard traveling back and forth during the off-season, he decided to stay and work in the gym during the warmer months, hence making him 100% of the time resident. But James argues, you know, the lack of the dating scene doesn't seem to be an issue here because here we are. Peter gamely responds, here I am, causing James to do a spit take. Aw, matching spit takes.
Aww.
Then Peter notices a sign that has an arrow pointing to... Corinne, any guesses? What's the sign say? What's it say?
The sign is pointing to someone's nether regions for a good time. The sign is pointing to a tempting alley called Makeout Alley.
Good guesses, Corinne. All of them, but you are incorrect. What's the sign pointing to? Find out with us after this break. And we're back. The sign actually is for Mrs. Claus's Christmas tree farm, and Peter gets an idea. Cut to him and James loading a fresh Christmas tree on top of Peter's rental SUV.
Okay, that fucking tree is giant. It's like 12 feet tall.
It hangs off the front and the back at the same time. So yes, it is a huge tree. It's huge. I don't remember Mama's ceilings being that high, but I could be wrong.
I know.
They're having a hard time finagling that giant ass tree. And James teases, I thought you were an expert at this. While Peter teases back, I just said that to try and impress you. The tree ultimately gets tied to the car, and Peter asks James if he'd like a ride home. James jokingly balks, in that death trap? Then admits that he lives a block away and can walk. They share a nice hug before parting ways, and Peter makes a quick stop at the wine superstore on his way home, because every little small town in New Hampshire needs a gigantic wine superstore.
Amen.
It's Costco-sized. It's Costco-sized. The residents there must be heavy drinkers.
Mm-hmm. Gotta have something to get you through those long winters.
Mm-hmm.
Back at the house, the family is wrapping presents at the annual Harrison Family Secret Wrapping Party, courtesy Christmas Carol. And wine is essential to do it. But they're out. So Nick offers to go to the store where he literally runs into Peter's cart. And the clanking of the two carts is epic because both of them have the wine piled high in their carts.
Yeah, there's lots and lots and lots of bottles of wine.
Yes. Peter asks, oh God, is my family already driving you that crazy? Nick says, no, they just need wine for the present wrapping-a-thon. Makes perfect sense to Peter, who admits that he's there to bring home wine to soften up his mom when she finds out that he bought a real Christmas tree. What? You want something like that instead of the white monstrosity that's in their living room? Nick is tickled by the fact that he got a tree on his date. Peter admits the second half of the date. Oh, Nick accuses, so you liked him? Peter counters, but I always like the wrong guys. Before he finally, coyly divulges that I don't have a bad time on the date. Nick jokingly tells him, as your fake boyfriend, I don't know if I like you seeing other guys. And Peter blurts, you asked for this. They head to the checkout with their wine, and Nick points out, well, Christmas Carol will be thrilled. They both head home, and upon arrival, Peter finds a few of his family members in the living room and solicits their help for Operation Christmas Tree. He tells his sister Lisa to distract Mom until they can make the switch. She immediately hops up and beelines into the kitchen saying, Mom, I got the craziest story for you. Remember that one time in seventh grade when Trevor M. farted on me? He then tells Nick to get his dad to fetch the old Christmas tree stand and his brother-in-law to help him muscle the tree inside. Everything's going smoothly until a few moments later, Mom wanders into the living room asking, what's going on here? Lisa follows, apologizing. Sorry, I had to pee. She got away from me. Peter does some quick damage control and tries convincing his mom that he thinks a Christmas tree should smell like a Christmas tree, gosh darn it, and be, you know, green. Mom is unconvinced until Peter adds, and James, winky winky, helped me pick out this tree on our date. As a matter of fact, he picked out this glorious tree that you see before you. Mom starts gleefully clapping and saying, maybe you guys will hit it off and you'll move back home. Everybody else in the family starts celebrating that idea, except for the two nieces, Sophia and Daniela, who have come downstairs and are eyeing everything judgmentally, as teenagers are wont to do. Just then, Peter's phone buzzes with a text. It's James, who invites Peter skiing tomorrow, and everyone in the family is already mentally planning the wedding. Well, most people.
Most people. And it's so funny, too, because I'm like, have these girls met James? Because they seem hell-bent on Peter, like, not being with them. I know they were like, Nick and Peter should get together because they get along so well, but I mean, if that's not going to happen, give James a chance.
Mm-hmm.
All we are saying is give James a chance.
Because he's really Luke McFarland, who's dreamy. He plays the cello. He also does woodworking.
Oh, yes. We've talked about that in previous episodes where Corinne's like, well, you can just be best friends with him and go off and, you know, play carpenter together. And I'll just, you know, just decide to show up that day and tag along.
Yeah, I've been trying to cultivate your friendship with Luke McFarlane, and you have yet to follow through. So I don't know what's going on. I thought we were friends, but, you know, whatever.
Well, I don't generally hang out in the same places as gay carpenters because I'm not handy and I'm not gay.
So. What? You aren't a gay man? Oh, now I'm confused.
But, oh,
bite me, Corinne. I know I have big shoulders, but come on.
No, you look like Moana. Are you kidding me?
And see the tatas? See these tatas? These should tell you.
Thanks for jostling your boobs at me. I appreciated that.
No problem. Just trying to make a point. A boob jostling point. Everyone is mentally planning the wedding except for Sophia, Daniela, and Dad. Dad sees an inn and asks a slightly less enthusiastic about the date, Nick, if he can help him out in the garage taking that old tree out. Once in the garage, Dad tells Nick, I always thought you and Peter would wind up together because you were the first person he introduced us to that meant anything.
Aw.
Nick argues, yeah, but you've never seen Peter with any of his boyfriends. Dad agrees, because they've never lasted long enough. The two nieces who are spying at the door poke their head in and add, we agree, we think you should wind up with Peter. And although he appreciates the sentiment, Nick is not convinced. The next day, Peter's getting ready for his second date with James, and the only ski attire he has is the outfit he wore when he was 17.
Oh my God.
It's super neon and totally 80s.
And
I'm sorry,
giant.
Totally 90s. And giant. Baggy, neon, 90s. Yeah. Quintessential for the time.
Yes. It brought me back. It brought me back.
The only thing it needs is one of those, like, the color sensing
hypercolor
technology.
Yeah.
Hypercolor, where you could put your hand on the actual material and the warmth would create a handprint that are good for like three wears. And then once you wash it, it doesn't work anymore. Nick gets out of the shower, sees the garb, and calls Peter, bruh, which 100% convinces Peter he does not need to go on this date. He looks too retro, and besides, he hardly has spent any time with his family and can't keep pawing him off on his bestie. Nick argues that he doesn't mind because he loves Peter's family and even volunteered to take his nieces and nephews to their pageant practice that afternoon. Nick lovingly places the ski helmet on Peter's head and tells him, I love the throwback look, by the way. And if James doesn't like you, you don't have to date him anymore. And then you could spend more time with your family. Besides, you already said yes. He leaves Peter with those words, walking away. And Peter gives him a little look-see at his high knee, wrapped in nothing but a towel as he walks away, and says,
well, hello then.
Yes, but besides that, Peter ultimately decides that his friend is right and heads out. On Peter and James's ski date, they're riding a lift and getting to know each other. Peter's explaining the charade that he and Nick are trying to pull off because his serious boyfriend was a complete shit. And James is surprised that Nick was game to play along for 10 whole days. Peter tells him the very sweet story of how they met in L.A. 9 years ago. They were actually faking being together way back then, too. Peter's eyes light up as he recalls the day. It was my second day in LA, so I was doing what every gay man does when they get into a new town. James chimes in, joining a gym? Absolutely, Peter agrees, smiling. And while I was in line, there was a couple in front of me, and I heard that they got a family discount. Nick, who just moved into town too, but I didn't know that, was next to me in line, and I just pulled him into this lie saying that we were a couple that just moved from Chicago with Chelsea, our African gray parrot, and we were getting married soon. Nick jumped right into the lie with me. We got the family discount, and we've been best friends ever since.
Aww.
James can sense the intimacy between them and asks, have you and Nick ever? But Peter assures him that they haven't. They're just really good friends.
Super duper duper good friends. Meanwhile, across town, Nick has taken the kids to rehearse at Aunt Sandy's pageant. And in the first few minutes, we get a sense that Sandy should not be left alone with small children. Oh no, She is threatening to get real mean and screaming to emphasize the fear she wants to see in the actor's performance. But it's done by Jennifer Coolidge, so in a charming way.
I would let Jennifer Coolidge direct my kids. I'm just saying that. Even if she acted like that, I'm like, but it's Jennifer Coolidge. She's going to bring the best out of them. The best.
Oh, no. Nick is approached by the two matchmaking nieces, Sophia and Daniela, and they tell him that you have to get Uncle Peter a Christmas present. Nick is resistant and says, why? He's not my boyfriend. Tamara, I get you presents, and you're not my boyfriend. Just FYI, and that's okay. Cousin Sophia says, he's not mine either, but I'm getting him something. Nick can see the writing on the wall and tells them, look, I appreciate whatever you guys are trying to do here, but Peter and I have a lot of history together, and we've actually never spent a real Christmas together. The realization surprises Nick, and the gals decide the best course of action would be to take a selfie with Nick, looking all cute, and send it to Peter. They do, and Peter receives it on the ski lift and shows it to James. James chuckles and says, "Oh, I bet you have FOMO." Peter agrees, "Yeah, I'm a FOMO-sexual," then catches himself and says, "Well, obviously I want to be here with you, but I don't get to see my family very much."
Best line, FOMO-sexual.
I love that line. Yeah.
And right up there with it is the Christmas drag name for Christmas Carol.
James understands and hopes he's not causing any drama. Peter assures him, "No, quite the opposite. My family is thrilled that I'm here with you, and they really want me to move back." James asks, "Have you ever thought about it?" Peter admits, "All the time, but New Hampshire isn't exactly the social media mecca." James chimes in, "Besides, your true passion is plants." Peter is surprised, and James scoffs. "You don't think I found you on Instagram? At Mr. Houseplant, spelled H-A-U-S? Ah?" Peter says playfully, "No fair, my mom didn't have any pictures of you, and I couldn't find you on Instagram." James informs him that his Instagram handle is Sky's the Limit, spelled S-K-I, like skis, sky's the limit.
Just love the wordplay. Love the wordplay. I'm here for it. And also, it might be worth noting that this is a reoccurring argument throughout the whole movie. So I was trying to figure out a way just to say rinse, wash, repeat, because Peter constantly is like, "I want to spend more time with my family, but I'm conflicted. I want to spend more time with my family, but I'm conflicted. I want to spend rinse, wash, repeat, rinse, wash, repeat argument." You know what, Peter, if you want to spend more time with your family, then you just spend more time with your family. You don't go elsewhere and then bitch about it, I guess, is my thing. Anyways.
Yeah, but if I had Luke McFarlane asking me out, I would have deep conflict within my soul, just saying.
Yeah, maybe that's like, I want to be here with you, but I don't want to seem like a shit because I am here visiting my family. But I mean, he is there for 10 days. 10 days is a lot.
Yeah.
10 days around family is ample time. If you were there for a weekend and doing this shit, I could understand the remorse behind it. But 10 days is fucking like, come on, man. Come on. Back at Peter's family's house, Nick is reading the little cousins, Sam and Simon, his book, Saving Emmett, while Mom complains that here I am decorating the tree for the second time, and now there's needles to contend with. Sophia offers, "Well, Peter would be here to deal with it if he wasn't on that date that you set him up on." And Sister Daniela wonders aloud, "What's taking him so long? I'm going to text him." Mama Carol threatens her with a dustbuster, and the girls relent. They will not interfere with Peter's love life for now. Meanwhile, little Sam has lots of ideas for a Saving Emmett sequel book because he loves it so, and tells Nick all about how his next book should be about Emmett being at the doggy hotel and then sad because Nick's gone, but then he's so happy when he comes home, and then Uncle Peter can be in that book too.
Aww.
Nick snuggles the boys and the nieces snap pictures. Nick really does love his friend's family. Meanwhile, James and Peter are also having a great time getting some powder on the mountain, and I don't mean cocaine. They're putting their gear away, and Peter thanks his date for all the helpful ski tips that he got. He asks James seriously, "I hope you don't feel like you were working all day." And James responds by grabbing him and kissing him hard before saying, "Not at all." And it was a good kiss.
Oof. "Yes, please, may I have another?"
James then proposes that they après ski, and Peter agrees until his phone buzzes. He grabs it and sees the text with Nick and his nephews and has a change of heart. He tells Peter, rinse, wash, repeat, he wants to go spend more time with his family. And James asks teasingly, "Was my kiss that bad?"
Aww.
And Peter deadpans, "Horrible. I wasn't going to say anything." They chuckle and drive back to Peter's house together. But before Peter gets out of the car, he tells his date that he had a great time, and James agrees, saying, "You can go ahead and just Venmo me for that lesson fee." Peter chuckles, then grows serious when James isn't laughing with him. But then he ultimately does. He's just joking. And it was a pretty perfect end to a pretty perfect date.
Aww.
But they didn't kiss or hug or anything goodbye. They just get out of the car, and I'm like,
Where's the passions? When you leave the car, you at least have to give each other longing kisses.
Nothing says romance like Venmo me for that ski lesson fee.
Sure. Before Peter can go inside his family home, he gets ambushed by Nick, who is donning the Oprah reindeer earmuffs. He's donning that gay apparel, gosh darn it. He asks excitedly, how did it go? Peter tells him how amazing the date was, but he felt conflicted because rinse, wash, repeat. He wanted to be home with his family too, and finally divulges that he's seriously considering rinse, wash, repeating, moving back home to spend more quality time with the people he loves. This surprises Nick, and he asks, you must really like the guy if he's got you thinking about all this. But Peter insists it's not that serious. It's only been two dates. James was just the straw that broke the camel's back. Over the table, après-ski, you know how it is. Exactly. Besides, Peter admits, I like L.A., but I love my family. The only person I love in L.A. is you. This chokes Nick up, and he tells his friend, well, I'd really miss you. Meanwhile, inside the house, Peter's family is spying on them and conspiring. Half the family, well, Mama Carol, thinks Peter should wind up with James, and the other half, well, really, the other 99%, think Nick is perfect for him. Mama Carol encourages everyone just to leave Peter and Nick alone because she has it on good authority from her LGBTT book that just because gay men get along doesn't mean they're destined to be with each other. Dad comes into the room and sees the intimate conversation Nick and Peter are having outside and exclaims, are they proposing? Did Nick finally take my advice? Mama Carol is appalled because they all shouldn't meddle. Right, Mama Carol, you shouldn't meddle. Thank you for that comment. And Lisa scoffs because Christmas Carol is the queen of meddlers. The boys' meaningful conversation outside is interrupted by Aunt Sande, who wobbles unsteadily out of a taxi, proclaiming, all the world's a stage, and most of the players are desperately under-rehearsed. She then meanders into the house and announces to the spying relatives that the pageant is a giant load of crap on a stick, and not in a good way. Lisa's husband asks what's on my mind, which is, what exactly is the good way? But Sandy can't be bothered with such trivial questions. She shuffles into the kitchen while Lisa gets a grand idea. She tells the fam, Peter and Nick should help Sandy with the play. That will shove them closer together. Mama Carol argues that they shouldn't ask the boys to help just because they're gay, because it's a common misconception. She knows this from her LGBTT book. That gay men are always good at theater. But Lisa waves this off because she's proposed the idea due to the fact that Peter handles a lot of stage design with his social media and Nick is great with tools and therefore would help with the sets.
Yeah, Christmas Carol. We're thinking about the nuts and bolts of it, not just making common misconceptions. Mm-hmm. Huh. Lisa goes to Aunt Sandy to pitch the idea, and Sandy agrees that asking the gays is the way to go because they're always so talented and they're fighters, and for some reason they're all obsessed with me, which I don't understand, but I kind of like a whole lot. Because you're Jennifer Coolidge. Peter and Nick are still outside working through their feelings about potentially not being fully in each other's lives. Peter blows into his hands to warm them, and Nick takes off his reindeer earmuffs and offers them to his friend. Peter refuses, saying, well, now you're going to be cold. And his friend softly replies, I'm done. And we have a second or two to ponder this. Is he done with the relationship? Is he done with their friendship? No. He flips the switch, and the entire outside of the house is illuminated with twinkling Christmas lights.
Aww.
Peter is stunned because the boy does a good job. And he softly thanks his friend for doing the awesome decorations and for being so awesome with his family and just for being him. They have an uneasy peace with their feelings of living apart, but finally go inside. Cut to the next day, Aunt Sandy is being even more of a directorial tyrant. She is so peeved at her cast not having their lines memorized that she takes over the act and does a one-woman show for the nativity scene rehearsal. Nick and Peter, who are in the auditorium watching, offer to help, and she reluctantly accepts. I'm guessing that nobody filled in the guys on the plan to help the night before, or did they?
I think they were just getting the lay of the land. They were seeing how things were going so that then they could jump in at strategic moments, and definitely seeing what Aunt Sandy does is a strategic moment to jump in, save the children, save the children.
This whole scene of Aunt Sandy taking over the play and being the tyrannical, like, leading lady for all the parts, I think was kind of like one of those wonderful Netflix moments that you sometimes get. Like, the streaming services have a little more leeway in the script and everything like that. So I think Jennifer Coolidge was kind of like shining in her Coolidge-ness in this as Aunt Sandy, and they let this scene go for a really long time. Longer than they needed to, but they're probably like, fuck it, it's Jennifer Coolidge.
Oh, they
Coolidge
needed
at
to.
Her best, and she is
that
shining.
Was hella funny. Usually that I'm was, I'm yeah, not her. For comedic riffing, but this was beautiful.
Like I said, Jennifer Coolidge.
Yes.
Then we get a montage because Sandy accepts their help of Nick and Peter, saving the show with rehearsals and set building and fun as the days pass. And they inch closer and closer to Christmas. The day before the pageant, Nick and Peter are rehearsing lines around the dining room table with the nephews, prodding their memories to remember their lines by bribing them with Christmas treats. Little Sam complains, I don't want to do this. We're not even getting paid. And Peter retorts, yes, you are, in Christmas cookies.
As Peter says this, his phone rings and he excuses himself because it's his boss, Lachney, who doesn't pay Peter in cookies, but in cold, hard cashola. Peter has...
Don't answer that phone, Peter. Don't answer the phone. Don't do it.
Don't do it. Boundaries, Peter. Boundaries.
Never a good idea.
Peter has a heated conversation with him. And once he hangs up, he angrily informs his family that their client wants to sack the whole shoot. A shoot in which they paid just one of the five models $15,000. Which I'm like, I will be your model. I will take off my top. $15,000? Okay. I will put shaving cream as a cute little beard on my face. Yes, sure. You got me.
Corinne will take off her shirt for much less.
What? $15,000 or bust, baby.
She needs $1 million to go to a haunted house for the entire... No, $5 million
Thank
to
you.
Go.
I was like, a million is not enough.
For Halloween. But she will take her tatas off for $15,000. Take her tatas off. Take her tatas out for $15,000.
Yeah, mine aren't removable. Thank you, though. For $15,000.
I said that.
Yes. Okay. So, anywho, the client wants to use real people instead of influencers, which is slang because real people are still models. Nobody cares, though.
Real people is their word for models.
Yeah. Real people is their euphemism for models. Nobody cares that it's Christmas and nobody will be available to work. Mama Carol asks her son if she wants him to call his boss and work things out. And Peter smartly declines. Then Papa gives Peter a suggestion. Take pictures of Nicholas. He's real and could be a model. He's a 10. Nicholas, thank you, Barry Bostwick. That was amazing. Nicholas is not interested and skitters off. Under the pretense of being busy, but Peter is on board and thanks his father for the great idea. Peter scampers after Nick and Mama Carol chastises her husband. You're meddling. But Peter must be convincing because we cut to him directing Nick outside, chopping wood and posing out in the snowy woods with the quintessential shaving cream beard, Santa beard. They get some great smoldering shots. Then Nick turns the camera on Peter, and Peter playfully poses while they banter back and forth. The two work well together, and finally, Peter takes his camera back and asks Nick to breathe so he can snap a shot with his cold breath wafting in a little foggy waft in front of his face. It's hot. The whole scene has a ton of hot, haughty sexual tension with two very cute men, and I am here for it. The scene is hot, but the photo is cool. And when Peter looks at the photo, something shifts. He looks at it for a long time. Could those be hearts in his eyes?
Maybe.
Before his phone buzzes, Nick jokes, is it work? They changed their minds again? But now they want real girls, right? Peter informs him that it's James asking him out to drinks. Peter initially wants to decline, telling his friends that he's got too much work drama and he wants to spend more time with his family. But Nick disagrees.
Rinse, wash, repeat. Rinse, wash, repeat.
He thinks Peter should go because his work problem is solved now and he's practically spent the whole day with his fam. After thinking a moment, Peter comes to a solution and asks Nick to come with him. His friend scoffs because I don't want to be the third wheel and tells Peter, go. Peter, not used to the reaction, asks, why do you want me to go so bad? His friend responds, "Because I think you want to." And Peter finally relents and half-heartedly says, "Okay then, I'll go." While Nick's heart breaks a little bit as he watches him walk away.
Mm-hmm. I want you to go, but I don't want you to go. And I don't want to go, but I want to go. But I don't want to go, but I want to spend time with you. But I don't want to spend time with you. Oh, that's when it happens. They're starting to slowly go down the I don't want to be friends anymore hill. I want to be more.
Heart eyes, heart eyes, heart eyes.
And since it's Christmas, they're on a sleigh and it's gathering momentum. So things start off slow, but then they start getting faster and faster and faster and more exciting. Until Peter heads off to his date. And since Nick has the rest of the day free, he starts writing drafts of his Saving Emmett book sequel. His phone TaskRabbit app buzzes and he accepts a job and heads out. Sophia and Daniela catch him on the porch and demand that he admit to having feelings for their Uncle Peter. He brushes them off, explaining, "Peter is off on a third date with somebody else, and I've accepted a TaskRabbit gig, so I gotta go." The girls let him because they can focus their conspiring closer to home. They know the only place in town to go on a decent date is their parents' car. Daniela calls her mom to ask if Peter is there with his date. Mom confirms this and adds, "It's not good. James is really hot." The two girls insist that, "Mom, you gotta do something to thwart that date." And Lisa, who's now on board the Nick and Peter should be together train, assures them that she is on it. We cut to the family bar. Peter and James are playing darts, and Peter is gushing about how smart and talented Nick is. He practically built the whole pageant scene single-handedly in a day and a half. James points out that Peter talks about Nick a lot, and Peter realizes this and tries brushing it off as having, "It's just because I have such a wonderful friend. But you talk about me all the time, huh, Corinne?"
Only always. And also, I say that you're super awesome, and I'm glad I don't have to be jealous of other people's best friends because I have the best friend who dropped everything the day my sister died to drive up from LA and be with me in Oakland for practically a week, telling her boss to fuck off. Yeah, also, sorry, but not romantically in love with you.
That's okay, because just because we're two women does not mean we have to be romantically in love with each other, just like the LGTTTTT book says.
Yes.
Peter realizes this, brushes it off to just having a wonderful friend, and James admits that he's a little jealous and would probably be boasting too if he had a bestie like that. Just then, Lisa barrels around the corner and practically smushes an entire burger into James' shirt and pretends it's an accident. She looks at Peter accusingly and says, "Look what you did!" Peter glares at his sister incredulously, and she leans into her farce. "Yeah, of course it's Peter's fault. Did he ever tell you about that time he ran over my science project in his Barbie Baywatch rescue cruiser? I could have solved global warming, but no, I couldn't remember what I did for the project. And look at the state of the world now."
I love how Peter's being accused of being the reason why we have global warming.
Yes. Not only did he cause this burger to be smushed into James' shirt, the global warming is also Peter's fault.
Yes.
And he wants to come back to all that in his family. That's cool. That's cool. You know, to each their own. She walks away in a huff.
In a huff.
And Peter is full of a what the fuck just happened. Meanwhile, across town, Nick is tasking rabbits and is on a nearby roof, fixing some Christmas lights. Sophia and Daniela find him because he was on foot and couldn't get that far. They see the ladder that he used to get on the roof and they pull it away, demanding, "Admit that you have feelings for Uncle Peter." Nick denies until they start walking off with the ladder and he stops them. Wait. Okay. I do have feelings for Peter, but I don't think the feeling is mutual. The nieces demand that he... They're some bossy girls.
They're teenagers. What do you expect?
Of course. They know best. Of course. They've been in the world for a long time. They've dealt with all the situations and scenarios. Good enough to know what's best for Peter and his adult boyfriend.
Yes.
Friend that's a boy.
Yes.
The nieces demand that he do something about it just as the homeowner comes out and clears his throat. Peter implores them, "Ladies, please, I want to keep my 5-star rating." And they reluctantly put the ladder back and let him return to work. How good of them.
How very good of them. I also had a 5-star TaskRabbit rating and I loved working for TaskRabbit. I did all kinds of things that included me walking around on top of people's roofs and it was glorious.
God, I wish I bought more IKEA furniture if I knew that I would have. I'll just wait till Corinne comes over and then I'm going to buy that 7-piece living room set that I've been eyeing because I, one time, sure I said it,
bought a bookshelf, put it together by myself, and fucked up the instructions so royally that I had to buy a drill and screws to keep it together because all the notches and clips I accidentally broke off.
Well, I bought actual hex wrench adapters for my drill so that I could use them to assemble IKEA furniture more swiftly. So I am ready for you. You just invite me over to the IKEA party and I will happily assemble away.
Okay, IKEA party of two. IKEA part, because it's only going to be me and you. Mostly you. I will be watching, offering snacks and drinks.
Yes, that's perfect. You can occasionally fan me, feed me grapes, you know. Maybe some of that Trader Joe's dill Havarti. It's really good.
Stop with the dill Havarti. Sure, I'll go get you some dill Havarti. I'll be back in 45 minutes to an hour.
Oh, really? Because it only takes me about 10 minutes, just total.
All I want for Christmas is for Corinne to stop throwing her dill Havarti in my face.
That's okay. I'm about to eat some Trader Joe's stuffed olives. Don't worry about it.
Hate you. You know what? I got stuffed olives too from the grocery store around the corner from my house. You know the one thing that miffed my melon, whatever that means. You know the one thing.
You don't want to miff. You don't want to miff Tamara's melon. Watch out.
You know the one thing that chapped my hide is that it was like $3 more than it is at Trader Joe's. I bought them begrudgingly, but I was like, I can get these at like $2.99 at Trader Joe's, and they're like $6 here.
Oh, melon officially miffed.
Trader Joe's.
Later on, Nick and James date sans burger shirt. They're walking down the street. Oh, but James has clothing on. Just FYI, gentle listeners, he is not walking around out in the snowy area shirtless. Yes. They're walking down the street and Peter is explaining how his family has this thing where they think he should have wound up in a relationship with Nick. James asks if there's anything to that theory. And Peter scoffs, saying, "Don't you have that one friend that everyone thinks you should be with?" James only thinks a moment before saying, "No,
because that's not normal." It's not normal. It's not normal to have a friend that you generally think that everybody thinks that you should be with, because 9 times out of 10, you try it and you either wind up with them or it doesn't work out, and then mixed bag on whether you guys remain friends.
Just then, Peter's phone buzzes. His boss loves the new photos with him and Nick and asks, "More! I want more!" That's what he said. Quote, Peter, fresh out of models, gets an idea. He asks his date hesitantly, "You wouldn't want to pose for a razor ad on Instagram, would you?" Fuck yeah, he would. James is on board, and they quickly hightail it to the store to get the mandatory shaving cream for the beards. They have a short but productive photo shoot that includes James jumping up and clicking his heels delightfully. Oh, so cute. For the last image, Peter requests that James do the same shot Nick did, a close-up with a cold exhalation, cold breath in front of his face. He does. And when Peter glances at the picture, he doesn't get the same feeling he did when he looked at Nick's. He thanks his date for all his help, and they head down the street. They wind up outside of James's house, and James asks Peter if he would like to come up. Après-ski, winky, winky. Peter initially accepts, then declines, because his nieces need him since the pageant is tomorrow. James understands and says, "I can't wait to see it. That is, if I'm still invited." Peter assures him that he is. "There will be a ticket waiting for you at the window." And he leaves without kissing him goodbye.
Or hugging him.
Anything. No. I'm like, If I had the opportunity to be kissing on and hugging on consensually Luke McFarland, I would be. Thank you very much. Mm.
Yeah, they were just about to fuck. And then they just parted ways. Anyways, Peter gets back home pretty late and finds his two nieces in his bed. He is miffed, but quietly leaves to bunk with Nick. Once Peter closes the door, the two girls who are feigning sleep high-five each other. Mission accomplished. Peter goes to his friend's room, and Nick is not at all surprised in the slightest that the girls forced them to sleep together, but doesn't let on as they both drift off to dreamland. The next day, Peter is tasked with doing the girls' makeup in a tasteful manner for the pageant, because the initial outfit selection that they came up with was very garish makeup and halter tops with animal tails. So
yeah, it was a lot with the makeup. They looked like they applied the entire palette to their face.
They look like slutty forest creatures, which is, there's nothing wrong with that, but probably not the best for a play called Jesus H. Christ. And Peter does give them the makeovers. And afterwards, Sophia and Daniela take some social media shots and then cut to the nitty gritty. They ask if their uncle has feelings for Nick. And after a little reflection, Peter admits, I've had feelings for Nick in the past, and yes, maybe even now too, but the risk is just, I mean, if Nick and I went down there and it didn't work out, then I'd lose him. Sophia asks, well, what if it did work out? And Peter says quietly that then I'd be happy. He looks up to the sky and says, Santa, can you hear me? That's too Yentl.
Santa, can you hear me? I have been so good this year, and all I want is one thing. Tell me my true love is here. He's all I want, just for me. Underneath the Christmas tree, I'll be waiting here. Santa, that's my only wish this year.
I sincerely hope you play that over the montage part, because that's amazing. He says, Santa, can you hear me? And then chuckles, because a flash of recognition crosses his face. He looks at his nieces and cries, that's our Christmas song! Sophia is on it and grabs her phone to play Santa, Can You Hear Me? By Britney Spears.
Yeah.
Peter asks, do you all remember the choreography? As he moves furniture out of the way. And one of the girls cry, of course, you've only made us do it ever since we could walk. They break into a very cute choreographed routine because that's what Funkles are for. Halfway through, Nick and Peter's two nephews hear the music and wander upstairs. The boys immediately jump into joining the girls dancing, and Peter tries to coax Nick to join, but Nick declines until Daniela grabs his hand and whispers excitedly, we talked to Uncle Peter, and the feeling is mutual. Nick gets a glimmer in his eye and smiles at his bestie, who's too busy shimmying around to notice. He joins them, and they all joyously bounce around together to Britney, bitch.
Santa, won't you something this year?
Even if Corinne doesn't know the lyrics, she will wiggle in as much singing as she possibly can.
It's Britney, bitch. Yeah.
We should just do that with you. It's Corinne, cunt.
I'll take it.
It's Corinne, cochina.
It's Corinne, cochina. Yes. The next day at the pageant, Aunt Sandy gives the children an intense pep talk backstage. It was obviously procured by Peter because there were no threats or screaming, although she does seem to think that this play may cause world peace. And when Peter admits to Nick, that was word for word Madonna's pre-show prayer from Truth or Dare, it makes so much sense. And I also think that Aunt Sandy would not be above cribbing it and claiming it as her own. Outside the auditorium, seats are packed and Aunt Sandy comes out dressed as Glinda the Good Witch. Because, of course, you need that in a pageant called Jesus H. Christ. The Nativity play is an eclectic mixed bag, but the whole audience enjoys it, including James. He chuckles at all the play mishaps until he notices Peter and Nick watching the show back through the doorway of the church's kitchen, arm in arm, mouthing the words along with all the kids. His face falls a bit at their closeness. After the play, the guys are hanging out by themselves in the church kitchen, reveling in their shared success. Peter marvels, "We actually pulled it off." Nick agrees, "With the help of their two goddaddies." Yes, goddaddies. With the help of their two goddaddies, Peter gives his friend a heartfelt thank you for coming home and everything else he did. There are serious hearts in his eyes, and they share a warm hug. When they pull away, Nick finally admits, I love you, Peter, and not like a friend. Peter is taken aback, and he tries processing the information. He reminds Nick that, I want to move back home. Nick admits, that's what convinced me that my feelings weren't just platonic, because when I heard you say that, it devastated me. Nick moves in for a kiss, and Peter, motherfucker, pulls away. I don't know how I feel about this. No, I actually do know how I feel about it. I do not like it at all. I am a miffed melon. Thank you.
I was going to say, you obviously feel strongly.
Strongly.
Melon miffed.
Yes. Peter pulls away saying, I can't lose you as a friend. What if it didn't work out? Isn't that what would happen? Nick's confused and asks, so you don't want to try or you do want to try? Peter waffles and finally admits, I can't lose you as a friend. James enters the kitchen, interrupting their moment, but not on purpose, just because he's going to see Peter.
Or did he?
He introduces himself to Nick, who is still reeling from the slight he got after confessing his feelings. James says, well, we should all get to know each other because we just went viral. He turns his phone around to show the photo shoot they all participated in and all the likes they received. Peter surprised that the photos went live so soon, and James proposes that they all get drinks. Celebration! Peter agrees he needs lots of drinks. And Nick says, I'm just going to hang back. I got to take a call from the doggy daycare, check in and everything. I'll just be 5-10 minutes behind you. Just go on. It'll be fine. It'll be fine.
But Nick lied. He goes straight to the familial home and packs his bags. See, I was going to say, this is why I put Eatonton in our Steel Magnolias episode, because familial is as hard for me to say as Eatonton. Familial. You have to the end.
Eatonton just kind of rolls off your tongue. Familial is just like, for me. But Eatonton, there's so many T's going on there. But familial is just like, oh, yeah.
For you, it's like wolf and wolf. I can't say familial. You can't say Eatonton. We all have our vices. Meanwhile, James and Peter are at the bar watching a musical performance. James says, I feel like I know that guy. And Peter informs him that the singer is Kevin, the snowplow guy, who writes Christmas songs and is also a notary and an animal psychic. And I believe that he is the leader of an actual band that does cover songs in real life and in many, many movies where he curses throughout them and makes them kind of raunchy. But I don't know his name offhand. That guy. James chuckles and then holds up his phone, showing Peter that his personal account, Sky's the Limit, has also gained 10,000 new followers. Peter tells him, you should move to LA. Strike while the social media iron is hot. This confirms James's suspicions and he asks, move to LA even though you want to move back here? Peter's embarrassed because he realizes how that sounds, but James tells him, maybe it's time you heard it. I had a great time with you, but remember when I asked you if you and Nick had an undeniable connection that everyone can see except you? Well, you do. It was obvious every time you talked about him because you'd get this cute little glint in your eye, more so than when you talked about plants, even. After contemplating this.
Oh, that cute little glint in your eye when you talk about plants.
Well, he has a special relationship with Judith and what was his other plant's name? Linda?
I'm sure all of his plants have names.
Oh, I'm sure. After contemplation and a little more conversation, both guys admit that they like each other, but James realizes that Peter is pushing the relationship as another reason to move back to New Hampshire, and James doesn't want to be that guy. Peter is a lot less sure about his feelings for Nick, but his date encourages him to be brave. Damn. Meanwhile, Nick has across town booked a hotel and tries killing time until his flight. He's not staying at the familial home anymore. He accepts a TaskRabbit chore, which takes him to a man who is painting his small hardware store before trying to rent it. Nick is game to help, but when he arrives at his task location, he realizes that the space could use some greenery.
Ooh. And this man had the tiniest hardware store of all time. I'm like, you have room for, I don't know, a screw and a hammer, and that's about it.
Yeah.
But it's a perfect size for a little plant, a boutique plant store. I don't know why
spoiler,
I would say
spoiler.
That. Hey, look, Miss Greenery Foreshadowing. Okay, I'm just greenery foreshadowing a little more specifically. Across town.
It could be a marijuana dispensary.
True. Is it? Is it a marijuana dispensary? Keep those listening ears listening to find out. Across town, Peter races home to talk to Nick. He sees the letter Nick left on the bed saying he's going back home. But he texts Nick, and when he doesn't get a response, he uses the Find My Friend app and pinpoints Nick's location. Peter drives into town, recognizing their rental car on the side of the road, and parks behind it. He finds his friend inside the empty store. Peter confronts Nick. I can understand you leaving, but what are you doing in an empty storefront? Nick admits, well, I had time to kill, and guess what? I bought you a gift. Peter argues, we don't do Christmas gifts. Nick tells him, this year's different since you're moving away. He holds his hands up and declares, this is your gift. I negotiated a good deal with the rent, and I'm paying for the first 6 months so you can open your plant store. Peter pushes back, with what money? And Nick informs him, I'm going to use the Saving Emmett book money because although you think that I should save it for a rainy day, I was always saving it for something important. He looks at his friend pointedly saying, and you are important. And guess what? It's not a rainy day. It's a snowy day. They both move to the window and they look outside, seeing the snow falling softly outside the window. Peter says quietly, I love you too. It just took a little help for me to realize it. Nick doesn't understand. You say you love me, but when you talked about moving back home, you never invited me. Peter argues, you said you'd never leave LA. And Nick disagrees. I never said that. I said I'd miss you if you moved here. Peter counters, that implies that you wouldn't move here. Nick cries, you never asked. They both admit that their feelings scared them. And then Peter grabs Nick by the face and they kiss so hard and so deep that I'm feeling they need to close the blinds before things get really hot. When they break away, Nick smiles slyly at his friend and murmurs, I can't believe it. I got you an entire store and you haven't even said thank you. Peter thanks him and asks, would you move here to help me start this? Because I don't know how to do any of that handyman stuff. Nick assures him sultrily that he can be his task rabbit. But he's also going to be working on his own stuff. He lets his friend know that he's been writing his book sequel. Peter asks him if he'll still be okay hanging out with his family so much. And Nick looks at him with hearts in his eyes and says, I've been waiting for a family for a very long time. We cut to Christmas Day, where the whole family is sitting around the Christmas tree, boisterously opening presents. Peter and Nick finally make their announcement by handing Simon and Sam the first draft of the Emmett sequel. And Sam reads aloud the last line of the book. And Peter and Nick and Emmett move to New Hampshire. Peter gets closer to Nick and repeats pointedly to his family, and Peter and Nick and Emmett move to New Hampshire. He looks at everyone meaningfully until they realize what he's saying. They burst into cheers. Yay! As Nick and Peter share a kiss. We close with Kevin the Plow Guy singing us out to the credits. And of course, Aunt Sandy joins him on stage to be his backup or front-up dancer because she's a ham and wants to create a love connection with the very single Kevin the Plow Guy. The end. So, Miss Tamara, how many dry kisses do you give? Single all the way, ching, ching, ching.
Well, this movie was chock full of not the driest kisses that we've seen, which I was very pleased about. The kisses were hard and they were passionate. But for the movie overall, it was entertaining. It was funny. It was a fucking myriad of just great talent all throughout. The only thing that I want to knock it down about is because, again, some of those, like, the liberties that they have with some streaming services. I think although they were enjoyable, some of the parts went on a little bit too long. And some of the parts were a little bit unnecessary to the plot line. And there was also the part where Peter kept saying, I need to spend time with my family. I need to spend time with my family. I need to spend. Yes, we get it. Probably got it after the third or fourth time. You don't need to say it 7 more times. But the movie was diverse. There was some chemistry between Nick and Peter. I could definitely see myself just ingraining myself into his quirky family. His family wasn't that quirky. I'm like, they were quirky, but like in a good quirky way. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give this story higher marks than normal. I'm going to give it 3¾ dry kisses because talent abound, good storyline. Some of it was a little overplayed and clunky, and some of the dialogue where he keeps talking about rinse, wash, repeat, I want to spend more time with my family, got a little bit redundant. But I would highly recommend watching it. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I hope that Peter and Nick live happily ever after. Corinne, how many dry kisses do you give it?
I give this 4 dry kisses. It was a little diverse, but I would say it actually, it would be a 4.5 dry kiss movie if it actually was diverse. However, there's only one person who is, so Nick is black, and then everyone else in this movie is white, for fuck's sake. So it's like,
but it is a gay love story.
Yes. No, which is good. Yeah. Thumbs up for that. I found the movie to be delightful, and I laughed multiple times throughout, which Tam gets extra points for sharing a movie with me where I'm just chuckling throughout, because it's been a while since I've chuckled throughout a movie, so it was really nice. And yeah, I
did enjoy the wordplay, though. I enjoyed the wordplay very much so.
I thought the Jennifer Coolidge Jesus H. Christ nativity play was a lot of fun. I enjoyed Peter and Nick's love story. I thought there was a really nice connection between the two of them. So yeah, 4 beautiful, dry, but firm kisses.
Oh yes, another one where Corinne gives it a higher rating than me on a movie that I chose. Mark this on your calendars, gentle listeners. December 26th, it happens again.
So, Miss Tamara, what movie do we have coming up next week?
Nothing, because we're going on break.
Yay! We're taking the month of January off of the podcast because, yay.
Because we need it. We're frazzled. We're at our wit's end. We love each other, but it's going to be nice not having to do outlines in 6-hour episodes with this one for a month. But we will be back refreshed, better than ever, and might be slightly changing our format because we want to offer our gentle listeners the best that we can. So we're also going to be discussing that a little bit while we're apart.
Yeah, we take our
from
breaks
you,
to...
From not each other, from you.
Yes, we take our breaks to look at our podcast and do a little planning as well. So we still actually do a little bit of work over our break period. We may have another surprise in store for you. I don't know. Just ends up being about if Tamara and I look at each other and we're like, what do we do with our time? I don't know. I'm so bored. No, we know what to do with our time. We are not going to be so bored. But
I'm going to go spend 2 hours and get me some Del Havarti cheese, goddammit. Wednesday evening when we're normally recording, I'm going to be at Trader Joe's video chatting you, picking out the cheese, showing you the cheese, getting in my car and eating the cheese.
It's going to be glorious. If you have anything that you would like to say about Trader Joe's Del Havarti cheese, single all the way, us taking a break in January, anything else, you can reach out to us via email at onedrykiss@gmail.com or via the social medias, Instagram, Twitter, X, and Facebook, all at One Dry Kiss.
And that's one spelled O-N-E. And as always, if you can find the time to rate and review us anywhere you listen to this podcast, we'd greatly appreciate it. But in the meantime, we appreciate you stopping by and we bid you adieu with one dry kiss. Mwah. Mwah. See you next time.
See you next time.
You know what I was laughing about when we first started recording? Because we're video chatting and I have a very light pink camisole on. And it looks like I'm naked from the shoulders. Hi. Just thought I'd make this recording a little more interesting, Corinne.
Me too.
But I am wearing clothes. You're wearing your heart jammies and I'm naked. Great.